Fan Run Radio podcasters, many of you have been asking for a way to support the station if you live out of state and can't support our sponsors, and now there's a way. Just go to shopfanrun.com and buy a shirt, or two, or ten, and know that you're supporting the station that does our best to support you. Shopfanrun.com.
We kick off hour number two of the program. This segment brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. Check them out, goldsgym.com. There's one near you, and you can download the free 3-day VIP pass at goldsgym.com.
It's also that time of year gearing up for the New Year Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for a way to, what were you going to say, Nate?
Is this the time where you get really fat so you have better odds of winning
yes,
the challenge?
Yeah, you just start stacking up, get a couple of pizzas just to last you for an entire weekend, drink a gallon of water every day.
All right.
Yeah.
We need a hotkey of Mike Gundy saying, "Cause he's fat." Pick that up for me at some point this
okay.
week.
Cause he's fat.
Yeah, it's in that. I'm a man. I'm 40. Rant. The classic Mike Gundy.
Making a note now.
Thank you. Are we just getting another Oklahoma State guy? Another raise? This is so frustrating.
Could be. Eighth Maxim on the Periscope also said rumors that Yurchitz has an offer, and we're kind of waiting on his answer.
That would make sense.
Yeah, that's kind of the way it felt earlier in the week, that Pruitt liked Yurchitz and that we were waiting to kind of hear back from him. They had their football banquet, I think, over the weekend, and some thought maybe after the banquet was when he would make his decision. Obviously, we are to Wednesday now, and no decision has been made. And I don't know that I put if we don't hear by tomorrow, it's definitely not Yurchitz on this. I mean, so many things happen. He goes and talks to Gundy. Gundy says, "Well, let me get in touch with the AD. AD says, "Well, let me get approval from the board. Board says, "Yes, okay, we can give you a 33% raise and this new title and blah, 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 blah." Then you go back to Tennessee and say, "They're giving me this. If you guys can match this, I can," you know, that kind of thing. So it just takes time. Unfortunately, I think the time is the hard part, because every day we wait on somebody like Yurchitz, more guys are just popping off the board, and I think that's what makes this so tough. It is frustrating and tough to see USC open and shut, right? Bama, open and shut. Like, Loxley leaves, boom, we got Enos. We'll just promote him. No problem. Like, I think that's what's tough, is seeing other schools just do it so quickly. And if Florida State does ultimately hire Briles this week, which someone made the joke, yeah, that was like a done deal on Monday, and obviously there's nothing there either. But if they hire Briles, that's going to feel weird, right? It's going to feel like, man, now they're moving faster than you, and they had a bad season also. But, yeah, waiting on Yurchitz, I suppose. Someone tweeted me earlier and said, "What about Sarkisian? Is it possible we're waiting on him to get done with Atlanta? He and Pruitt worked together at Bama. Would that be a surprise. That'd be a shocker. I definitely would be... I think I'd be impressed. I don't know that I would love the hire, but I'd be impressed that nobody heard anything about it, and all of a sudden you got an NFL OC.
I think he'll be the next offense coordinator that's fired in the NFL. The Vikings just fired John DeFilippo.
Yeah, they needed to. That was a bad marriage.
And so, but if I had to put money on who the next offense coordinator to be fired, that'd
so maybe
put it on
maybe
Sark.
You don't have to wait to the end of the season. Cool.
Okay, so. You've gone through Hugh Freeze with his hookers, Kendall Briles with the Baylor scandal, Rush Probst and multiple families, and now you're to Steve Sarkisian and his alcohol stuff. Like, we're just hitting for the cycle here.
I mean, that's the least worst of them all, I guess.
I don't know, man. He did, like, coach a game on the sideline hammered. That's not great.
What was the outcome?
I think they won. I think they did win that game. I think it was a Thursday nighter.
Half credit.
Yeah. It was one of those where they couldn't lose.
It was Thirsty Thursday. You got to cut him some slack.
The guy, I mean, he showed up ripped at a booster event. Thirsty Thursday. The deal's in L.A., man, on Thirsty Thursday.
It's expensive to drink out there other nights
of
the week.
Golly, yeah. I mean, Atlanta, 4-9. They're officially out, right?
They're done
for? Okay. They've lost 5 straight.
I mean, mathematically, they might still have a chance if they were to win out, just because the NFCs could probably get a team in
very inconsistent offense all year. I mean, with a ton of talent. Yikes.
Do we want Steve Sarkisian? How do you grade that
one? No, not particularly.
Yeah, I don't want Steve Sarkisian.
That'd be odd. Just somebody threw out a name.
There was, I thought this was, you mentioned the Vikings. Warren Sharp, who does a lot of analytics work on NFL stuff, and then I'll tie this back to Tennessee here in a second. He put this out about the Vikings. You know, like the offense wasn't playing really well when they played good, better defenses. And I think there was this push kind of late by Mike Zimmer, like back at his offensive coordinator, like, hey, man, we got to run the ball. And DeFilippo, they've said, like, he if he could, he'd throw it every single play. He's one of those guys, right? And Zimmer's like, man, we got to start establishing the running game against these better teams. Well, Sharp posts these analytics. Vikings offense hasn't been great, but the answer isn't, all caps, more running. The Vikings are 1-5 the last 10 weeks when trying to establish the run with a first quarter run percent of 45% or higher on early downs. Does this sound familiar? Early down running percentages? They're better when playing to their strength, parentheses, passing. This notion that the Vikings were not, quote, adjusting to their personnel, I find to be humorous. They have one of the best duos of young wide receivers in the league, had no run game to speak of, and, buzzword here, a poor O-line. Data shows they lost when trying to establish the run, yet they need to run more, question mark. And one of our listeners this morning, this thread is exactly what I don't want to have happen at UT. That's why I hope Pruitt finds a pass happy OC and just gives him control. Seems to be what happened here, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got a head coach. It's like, hey, we got to establish the run.
Yes.
And he got a terrible offensive line, and he got, you know, running backs.
Filippo
that are
and
average.
Zimmer were Pruitt and Helton, man. I mean, it just is what it is. Just no, run it. Well, no, I think we need to throw it. No, we can't protect. Okay, well, let me do this. Oh, that kind of worked. But then you lose to South Carolina, and Pruitt gets to say, see, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Yikes. Well,
makes sense.
Now I guess we just wait.
What kind of offense does Sark run? I mean, is he? He was at Bama in 2016, right? That's the year.
I mean, he called one game. He was there, but
yeah, he was an offensive analyst for most of the season.
Was he co-OC with Kiffin, or just analyst promoted to OC for a game? I think he was just promoted for a game.
I thought he called the plays when Kiffin was out of the national championship.
Yeah, that's the one game.
When Kiffin wasn't there, but he wasn't. He was just an analyst before that.
Correct.
Right?
There wasn't like a co-offensive coordinator title.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, he was off the field. Like he was not even, and then Kiffin leaves, and they immediately promote him to that spot. I guess Kiffin leaves maybe isn't even the right way to say that. Like Saban told Kiffin to leave. He had to leave, right?
Kiffin checked out. Saban told him to get. In the last five games, the Falcons, you know, with guys like Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Tevin Coleman, Jesus, guys like that, 16, 19, 17, 16, and 20 points.
And they lost them all.
0-5. Losses to the Cowboys, good defense. Saints, not a great defense. Ravens, good defense. Packers, not a great defense. They get the Cardinals this weekend.
And wasn't Sarkisian, didn't he not run the ball enough in the title game? Isn't that what Saban, isn't that the narrative there in 2016? I can't remember.
I thought their offense played okay.
May have played great.
I mean, wasn't that that was the Hunter Renfro touchdown, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I think he just had a really good game. I don't know that I blame Sarkisian. But, yeah, maybe he kept trying to force the ball downfield with Hurts, and Saban just said, run the damn ball. That sounds right. They put, because I think Hurts threw a pick late or something.
35-31.
He also drove him, like, right down Thompson. The field late for the go-ahead touchdown before they gave up the other go-ahead touchdown to Watson. He has not been good with the Falcons, though, at all. The Falcons hate him. Falcons fans hate him because there's so much talent on that roster offensively, and they just can't do anything. Yeah, I didn't know they had Mohamed Sanu either. That's a loaded offense. And, I mean, I don't really understand what their problem is. Matt Ryan's already thrown for 4,076 yards. Julio Jones already has 1,400.
It's the red zone.
I know.
Yeah.
It seems like it's always been the red zone for Matt Ryan, though. Mm-hmm. So is that a Matt Ryan thing? He has not been good in the red zone since he lost Gonzalez. It's like he can only throw to tight ends in the red zone, and if he doesn't have a great one, it don't work. Because what was the stat? Like, Julio Jones doesn't have a red zone touchdown in a million years. Like, all of his touchdowns have been deep plays because Matt Ryan's not accurate on the fade.
Yeah, I think he finally got some, but yeah.
For a while, though, it had been
it was nuts.
Forever.
Brian says, let's be honest. To get the players we need to get back, we do not need the NCAA anywhere around. Hashtag freeze.
No, I agree with that.
Makes sense. I can't. Sark, though.
Did we go get Filippo?
They're talking about him. He might already be back in Philly.
I know. That's what this is.
Yeah. We'll come back. Hit a quick break here. Stick with us. You can give us a shout in the McKinney team hotline. What do you think about Sarkisian? Got any other options out there?
Volunteer vodka.
What about some of these other NFL guys? Jim Bob? In on Jim Bob Cooter? Freddie Kitchens? What do you guys think? 865-546-8200. We'll be right back. This segment of the program brought to you by Knoxville Security Service for all your commercial security needs right here in Knoxville. Check them out online at Knoxville Security Service. They got you covered. Access control, all your entry and exit ways. They can help make sure those are secure. Business video surveillance as well. They've got you covered at Knoxville Security Service. Head to the website for a free quote or give them a call, 865-368-5946. That's 865-368-5946. It's Knoxville Security Service. Saturday Down South put out an article. Houston, this is what we were talking about a little bit earlier. It's one recruiting question for each team in the SEC. Tennessee's is, can the Vols address an immediate need and add five-star offensive tackle Darnell Wright? Pretty sure he's a February signing guy. I could be wrong on that, though.
I think you're right.
I definitely don't think he's signing on Wednesday. It's going to go past that. But it's weird now with some of these guys that are they don't sign early, but they still enroll early, like we talked about with Jaden Hazelwood. So we'll see how that goes. But here's what Connor O'Gara said about Tennessee. Tennessee needs offensive line help bad. With the uncertainty of Trey Smith's condition, the Vols would love another blue-chip offensive tackle to plug and play immediately. Darnell Wright could be that guy. The 24/7 Sports crystal ball still has the Vols as the favorite to land the five-star offensive tackle. But he has a visit to Georgia this weekend. As we know, Smart has a knack for pulling off late recruiting victories. Needless to say, Jeremy Pruitt's top remaining target would be a major victory. Not only is it Kirby Smart at Georgia, it's one. I wish I knew his full name because I really want to say
Samuel
like,
L. Pittman.
That's what I was going
to. It's got to be an L.
Yeah, got to be, right?
Well, if I'm all it lasted.
So there's that. The other question, which would just happen to be right above that, could South Carolina make a late push to land Eric Gray?
Suck me sideways.
God! The four-star U.S. Army All-American took a surprise official visit to South Carolina over the weekend following his decommitment from Michigan. Will Muschamp does have a pair of four-star recruits from the Volunteer State committed. I mentioned one of those guys earlier. But a late add like Gray would be a major get for the running game that's been stagnant in recent memory. The Gamecocks could go down to the wire with the likes of Tennessee and Ole Miss. And apparently they have a South Carolina running back that might decommit, so that would then it's crazy. The running, it's like quarterback is the earliest position to commit, and it has a domino effect. Like, if the three of us all have a team and you get your guy, then that lets me know this other guy will come to my school, and then Davey gets his guy or whatever. Running backs are like the same, but all at the last minute. It's like running backs are the procrastinators on the recruiting trail. Like, they like to.
It's patience. You got to have that when you're running back.
Vision.
Wait for the hole to appear.
Do you blame Eric Gray at all for cooling on Tennessee because there's no offensive coordinator?
No. Are you kidding?
I can't believe the quarterback committed. I mean, obviously, he has time to decommit. But if I'm a running back, I want to know. Is it going to be Mike Yurcich? Or you know, is it going to be somebody that runs the ball with a fullback? Or is it going to be,
I don't blame him at all. That's why I'm surprised that we've let it drag this long. I mean, initially people were saying, "Oh, we're telling the recruits who it is. They already know." But
you're not telling the recruits like the guy's name. You can't. They tell people.
Think so. No, I mean, yeah, exactly. And that one receiver, where he's committed somewhere, I think, or he just decommitted from Oklahoma or maybe Texas. He said they're going to get a guy.
He may come in this weekend also. Just make sure you don't text them the exact same message about how you're going to use them in the offense.
You're our number one target.
Let's please not do that to both these running backs.
Hey, I got that.
Goodness.
How about Rick Barnes and the boys, though? Huh?
All right. Yeah.
How about him?
We really needed a midweek game this week to get our minds off of this football stuff.
I agree. It's weird to have a game, a week off, a game, a week off this time of year.
It's true.
But we finally get that road game, so What's-His-Face can start putting us in the top 25 poll, so that's good.
I'm glad you said What's-His-Face and didn't actually
I don't know his name. I don't care. It's a stupid thing to say.
Isn't it pretty standard, though, during finals week they don't have a game during the week itself?
I don't know.
Okay. But what he's saying is they didn't have a game
last week. It's weird to have two full weeks where there is not a game during the week. I mean, I don't know. We're going to get plenty of basketball. I'm not worried about that. It felt kind of weird. It's like right now we need that real bad as far as something to make you feel good on a Wednesday when you don't have an OC yet. It would have been nice to watch the boys roll something up on a directional school. By the way, Furman won again last night.
Furman got a victory, 77-69
nice
on Charleston Southern.
Nice little comeback for the 23rd ranked Furman Paladins.
I'm becoming a Furman fan. It's much easier that way.
F you.
Because you don't have to really care as much. Villanova lost to Penn.
Villanova's not very good.
Not this year, nope.
They're just not very good.
That actually hurts Furman's resume. That was one of their big wins.
Yeah. Villanova plays. They have a big
game.
They're
8-3 now.
Do they get Kansas? Yeah, they get Kansas like this weekend, I think. Kansas will roll Villanova over. It will be bad. Payback. It doesn't count for much, but it'll be payback anyway.
Oh, I guess. Okay, Villanova's only losses were to Michigan. Wow, that was really bad. 73-46.
Michigan's good.
I've forgotten how bad that score was.
Yeah, Michigan's good.
And then Furman, and then they lost last night. They were on the road at Penn. That's weird, right?
No.
Well, it depends on who you are. Some teams don't play road games at all.
What do you call it? They call it something in Philadelphia where like all those five teams kind of play each other.
Oh,
Philly
yeah.
Special?
No, not that.
You know what I'm talking about? I can't think of it. But it's like Temple, Villanova.
Is it like the Palestra or whatever they play all those games? So were they not? Was it not technically a road game? But they were the road team.
Yeah,
maybe?
It's just something that they do for like the city of Philadelphia, where all the schools are in that area.
Well, anyway, 78-75, Penn wins. It's Kansas at Fog Allen Fieldhouse against Villanova at noon coming up this weekend. Beatdown, you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think it'll be closer than a lot of people think.
What does that mean?
It's not going to be like a double-digit blowout. I think Villanova will actually keep it within single digits.
I do not.
It won't be a 27-point game like Michigan?
No.
Interesting. Tennessee, according to the BPI on ESPN, is an 81.2% favorite this weekend over Memphis. I do believe that game sold out yesterday.
Yeah. Didn't Penny say feels like they got a good shot or something like that?
Interesting.
I thought so, too.
I have not seen a line. I'm sure they're going to wait until closer to game time, make sure they have all the information to do that. But I don't know. I don't think Memphis is particularly good. This will be a crazy environment. Memphis fans obviously very excited. I do think there will be a pretty good amount of orange in this arena this weekend. But it will still be a madhouse for Rick Barnes and the gang. So far, Memphis 5-4 with losses to LSU, lost by 9, Oklahoma State by 20. CHLS? Anyone?
CHLS.
College of Holston Hills. That's it. That's the one. 78-75, lost by 3 to those guys. And then they lost by 11 to Texas Tech, Charleston Cougars. Just Charleston? But it's CHLS? Charleston.
CHLS? Yeah.
That was the yeah.
Huh. Is that Cal State?
I just said it's Charleston.
It's Charleston. Oh. It's what used to be College of Charleston. They've got good basketball. They just changed their school name, and that's a weird way to abbreviate it now.
Noon tip, 11 a.m. local time. That seems like it would be favorable for us with the body clocks and such. It's an early start for the home team.
Noon Eastern, 11 local, you said?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Saturday, right? Not Sunday this time?
Correct. Saturday, noon.
Okay.
Noon.
High noon.
On ESPN, I believe.
Shootout for the state of Tennessee. Can you say shootout in basketball? Is that allowed?
No. Sorry, ESPN2, the game.
Okay.
Why do we keep... get ESPN, but it's on a Sunday, and then we get Saturday game, but it's on ESPN too. This is Memphis's hole. This should be a great matchup. Memphis,
right.
they're in the tank. The good news is after Memphis, Samford, Wake Forest, Tennessee Tech, and then you start league play. Georgia comes to town January 5th, but you get a couple of games there to tune things up. That Wake Forest game seems that might be an interesting one. But then, obviously, league play starts. You get Georgia to start, then two road games at Missouri, at Florida, who I have yet to be able to peg. They play really well sometimes. They don't play well at other times. That's the weird thing about the SEC. Like, I know Tennessee's very good. They're going to win their fair share of games, but I don't know that I'm going to go into any SEC game just saying, yeah, no problem tonight. It's a sleeper. Maybe South Carolina. They have not been particularly good. Our games with A&M are always weird. Missouri will be weird just because of Konzo. I don't think Missouri is particularly good this year. They are 6-3 currently, for those who are wondering. I'm sure there are many of you, with losses to Iowa State by almost 20, Kansas State by 15, and Temple by 2. So, but
all right,
basketball about to get ramped up full time with games multiple times a week. Thank God.
Quick break here on the program. Stick with us. You're listening to 3 and Out, driven by Toyota Knoxville. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. This segment brought to you by Einstein Bros Bagels and their Caribou Coffee, the official coffee of 3 and Out. Coffee and bagels just go together. Get it together with Einstein Bros Bagels. Tell them you heard about them right here on 3 and Out in Fox Sports Knoxville. If you swing in and grab a bagel and a cup of coffee, it's 100% Caribou coffee, and it is delicious. Appreciate you guys sending stuff in. Corey Hill pointing out it's called the Big Five in Philadelphia, an informal association of teams that play each other, LaSalle, Penn, St. Joseph's, Temple, and Villanova. Of course, the basketball up there is always really, really good.
Penn is in Philly? That's where their university is, or is it just...
I don't know exactly where that.
I would not have guessed that. I would have thought they were on the... For some reason, I would have thought middle or west Pennsylvania. But whatever. I don't know.
No, I think they're... Yeah.
All right. So be it.
They kind of call it the Philadelphia City Championship. So there you go. And then
big bragging rights.
I hate I missed this comment from CB as we were talking about Sarkisian and a possible link to Pruitt. And, I mean, you know, we're just throwing names at the board now. He says, as a dedicated Falcons fan,
I don't think we're alone.
I can assure you it isn't Matty Ice. It's Sark. Look at Matt Ryan's numbers from the 2016 MVP season compared to now with three games left. Sark is clueless. Play call is atrocious. He was better when he was on the hooch. Hard to argue. I mean, the Falcons were, they were about to win the Super Bowl. Let's not forget that. Now they're... way out of playoff contention.
You know who the quarterback's coach was in 2016 in Atlanta?
Who was that?
Matt LaFleur. Tennessee Titans' current offensive coordinator.
There you go.
I'd like to say that's what it is, but...
I don't know about that either, yeah. We'll see. Jury's still out.
Can we hang on Tennessee basketball for just a second?
Let's do it.
8 games in, 7-1. I don't want to say, like, where are we at, but...
Right on schedule. Right on schedule. You need to beat Kansas or Gonzaga. If you're undefeated at this point, to me that would have been the
coup de grace.
Yeah, I mean that would have been awesome. Obviously, I don't know. You'd be set up for this kind of weird, like, how long is it going to last? Tension would be there.
It's fair.
I mean, you lost the number one team in overtime. Like it, you were able to
without your best player.
You were able to win when Grant Williams fouling out again. To me, that's huge. Admiral Schofield said it the best. He's like, I'm tired of these games being learning experiences. We can win these games. We just need to start doing it. And tonight, instead of just talking about it, we did it. So you had the whole thing.
What has to happen for this team to reach their potential? I agree with you. I think the trajectory is there. You're playing really well right now. I think obviously, health, of course. Where are we on Lamonte Turner and his injury and how that factors in? Where are we on the rotation, depth? I guess just general assessment of where this team's at. Like, what's working and what needs work?
Well, going back to your initial question of what will it take to kind of reach the ultimate success, I feel you got to have some sort of scoring presence in your second lineup, which they currently don't. I mean, we talked about it whenever they had to make the subs, bring in your second team. You really started to stall, and you kind of get to the point of just hold on until you're able to get your starters back in there to get some points on the board.
The good news is they play defense well enough to where, they don't go in and get shelled.
Yeah.
But I agree with that. Who is that player, though? Is it going to just have to be Lamonte and we just have to hope he gets back and gets healthy? Because I agree. As the season wears on and your starting five just keep logging minutes and minutes and minutes and minutes and get nicks and bruises and bangs, and does it have to be Turner? Because right now I don't know who you count on coming off the bench to give you both defensive effort and a quality scoring presence.
I mean,
I don't think it's going to take much.
If you keep the current lineup, you could say it could be Bowden. If you keep Pons as a starter. But I don't know, going back to the point, I don't know how much of having Bowden come off the bench is related to Lamonte's injury.
I don't either. I think I asked that either, I think Friday I said, if Bowden was healthy and also Turner was healthy, is Turner in over Bowden instead of Pons, or is it Pons anyway because he's a freak? That's going to be worth watching as Lamonte kind of works his way back. And when is that? Like, do we see him this weekend? Not playing against Gonzaga. Is that 3 weeks off?
I mean, don't you think if he could go, he'd have gone against Gonzaga? I mean, that's a chance for a marquee win.
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. Did they just rest him because, hey, it's fine. It's out of conference. Are they saving him for conference play? What's weird is he's not hurt.
No, nothing shows
it's just,
up on medical it,
the,
checks.
The shot is just off. And is that the deal with him? Like, you don't, if he's not making shots, he doesn't see the floor? Is he still not he's probably your, even with the injury, he's probably your second or third best shooter right now with what we've seen from Bowden.
I don't think you're going to get a score come from that second group. You're just not. I think you hope that that guys like Bone and Alexander can score when Grant and Admiral aren't at their peak efficiency. I just don't. It's kind of, to me, that's way too optimistic to think that during the season one of these guys is just going to become a different player than they are now. I do think they
can
play.
With the exception of Turner.
Right. Yeah. Well, and Bowden. I think you've got Bone, Turner, Grant, Admiral, Kyle, and did I miss anybody? Those are your scores, and that's just the way it's going to be. You've got, three guards and three bigs that can score, six players. That's where you're going to get the majority of your scoring. Mm-hmm. Now, the other guys, obviously, if they're, left open, or if Bone drives down the lane and somebody helps off a guy and he just hands it to, Pons to dunk it or whatever. Pons could score some, but let's not be crazy here.
Too.
That's what I'm saying. When the other guys are wide open, around the basket or even occasionally from three, you want them to take it and make it. But you don't really want guys outside of those six taking a tough shot ever. If you could scheme up a perfect game plan, you don't want anyone taking a shot that's not wide open except for those six players. And then you can narrow that down even more depending on the difficult, if it's a really tough late shot clock shot, you really want it to be Admiral or Grant, right? That's it.
Yeah, or someone else on a kickout, maybe.
So, I don't think you need – I think it's more of figuring out how to get great looks for that top group all the time and figure out how to rotate so that there's some scoring presence on the court that can create those open looks for those other guys. You don't want to be throwing the ball into Fulkerson and having him shoot over the 6'11 guy that's guarding him on a really good team that's like a tournament caliber type of squad. You just want him to be able to play defense, keep that guy from scoring, make sure there's no offensive rebounds by the opponent, and keep the game flow going so that Admiral Grant and the other guys can have their games.
Okay.
I want to stay on this. I got a few more thoughts. I want to ask you some questions, too, on the flip side. Stick with us. Tennessee Basketball Talk coming right back at you here. Final segment, hour two. Welcome back. Final segment, hour number two. We're going to get to the McKinney team phone lines here in just one quick minute. The McKinney team has one simple philosophy. The client comes first, and they love to help you with the buying or selling process right here in Knoxville. Check out their listings at ZillowKnoxville.com. That's ZillowKnoxville.com. It's the McKinney team with Keller Williams. Houston, one question for you, and then we'll get to the phone lines. I find it, okay, like you need to put everything into this Memphis game. Make sure that you don't lay an egg at all, that you play really well, that you put a whooping on them. It's a road game. That counts more in the eyes of the committee at the end of the season. It's out of conference. You definitely don't want to drop any non-conference games where you're on some resume comparison, even if it's just for seeding at the end of the year, saying, well, Tennessee got the 4 seed instead of the 2 because of this loss and this bad SEC loss on the road or whatever. So obviously there's that. But then there's some just walk-through games. I guess you got Wake Forest, which is at least a Power 5 team they need to focus on. Then you get in the SEC schedule. Do you try, if you're Rick Barnes, what are you trying to do to just get through the season healthy and then to make sure, because for me, if this team just peaks at tournament time, they could beat anyone in the country. And if you peak and you play and you just stay consistent, you'll win your early games in the NCAA tournament, and then if you play your best basketball at the end, you have a shot to go as far as you can go. But what should be the approach? There's been some little nicks here and there, some ankles, Alexander had the hip thing last year. Do you try and run? Do you try and sub a lot more, or do you feel like you need the guys to use every opportunity to play together at this point in the evolution of this group of kids?
I think it's a really good question. I think there are going to be games where you can play around with some lineups, right? You can get some minutes for guys outside of the top five, top six, and I think you need to do that. I don't think you want to do it to the point where you sacrifice a game because, you just didn't want to put Grant and Admiral out there late and you're up 8. And I mean, we remember the Arkansas game last year.
Yeah.
Obviously, those were different circumstances with Grant fouling out, but I think there are going to be games where you can rest guys if you want to. I think you just need to be smart about how you do it, and I think you should do that. It's early, obviously. I'm just kind of peeking through, but Tennessee on the BPI, 92% favorite to beat Georgia. 92. You're a 70% favorite on the road at Missouri. Again, this is all according to ESPN's BPI. At Florida, Florida's actually favored in that one. I did not expect that. Florida, 54.2% favorite, which is weird because they're 5-4. Arkansas had a weird loss this weekend. You're a 91% favorite. Like, there are going to be games where, at least right now on paper, you should be able to pretty comfortably beat these teams. And if you wanted to, you could probably thrash them. I don't think I would try to thrash anybody, especially now that we know with the net, the NET, a 10-point loss counts the same, or a 10-point victory counts the same as a 30. So I think in some of these games, instead of leaving the starters out there and just rolling up points on people, I think I would try to play the Fulkersons, the Ponds, the Jalen Johnsons, and Derek Walkers a little bit more, try to get them ready, try to get them familiar and prepared. Because I'm not saying last year the team ran out of gas, but I think a long basketball season, things happen, right? The hip flares up for Kyle. Admiral had that weird injury against Kentucky where I think it was just an ankle roll. I mean, that's not a season type of thing. But wasn't Grant dealing with a shoulder for a while?
Mm-hmm.
I do think you need to manage the guys in some of these games. But I don't think you don't want to do it to the point where you're sacrificing kind of their flow. You want them to be in rhythm. But I think probably last third of the season, that's – I think I would save him early instead of late, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then try to peak right as you go into SEC tournament play. Because you're gonna need to be peaking then, frankly. Your last five SEC games are at LSU, at Ole Miss, home against Kentucky, home against Mississippi State, at Auburn. Right now, Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Auburn are all ranked. So that's a good, like, hey, three big games, tournament, let's be hitting our stride. That's probably when I would ramp it up and make sure your starters are good to go.
Vol Nation Recruiting said, predict the next loss and how many losses for the rest of the season. I mean, I could see the next loss being January 12th at Florida, but I also think you could go the rest of the season and only lose four basketball games. You know, finish the year with five losses. Be pretty good. Pretty dang good season. Let's go to Mike on the McKinney team hotline. He had an offensive coordinator question or comment. What's up, Mike? You're on three and out.
Hey, guys. The longer this goes on, I think the more okay I would be with a Probst hire. Maybe that's the whole point of just dragging out this long is just to
lower the expectations.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, though, I mean, all these guys are glorified PE teachers anyway, and we've seen high school. I mean, it's not to say that he couldn't be successful. I mean, I don't know. With the NFL thing, though, I think Sarkisian is probably the only one who's likely to come back down to the college level just because he hasn't had any real success in the NFL, and he came from college anyway. And I think whenever he was an offensive coordinator and head coach in college, I think most of the time his offenses were finishing in the top 25 or top 30 and would have some good West Coast recruiting ties. So I don't think that would be a bad hire. Just because you go to the NFL and don't really have success there doesn't mean you can't be successful as an OC in college.
I don't disagree with that. Sarkisian was really good in college.
Yep. Thanks for the call,
Mike. I think he probably has more longevity as well, just because I don't think any big-time programs are going to be willing over to hand over the reins to him anytime soon, just with what happened at USC as well. So that's a plus, too.
Yeah, in a way, his baggage might be a reason you're able to hang on to him longer.
Oh, he found good baggage.
Yeah, finally, good baggage.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We do appreciate it. That's a great point. Those are good points on Sark. I do think, I mean, Kitchens and Jimbo, like, maybe not shocked, but I'd be surprised if either one of those is your new OC. And Sarkisian, like he said, is a good candidate to go and then come back to the college game. We've seen that with a lot of head coaches, obviously, as they garner all the headlines.
He's a quarterback guy, too, which helps.
There you go. He checks some of the boxes, as we say.
He does check some of the boxes.
We'll kick off hour three next.